So hi everybody, welcome to The Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry podcast with me, Philip Eidson, and Darren McAnthony, former chairman, current El Presidente of Peterborough United. How are you doing, Darren?
Well, I'm all right, pal. Listen, obviously I've been busy working where you've been grifting and holidaying up in California. Well, for some. You know what I mean? back in liberal heaven over in California there, you know, you must be.
Right.
Did you have a good time?
Yeah, it was great, thank you. We got back last night, so feeling a little bit jet lagged, which I never thought was possible in country, but those 3 hours still make a difference. It was great in California, but it's also really interesting. I'm not going to go off on a COVID diatribe for the next 10 minutes, but, you know, just seeing how different states kind of go about things is interesting.
Hang on, let me stop you right there, right? Because you're a lib, we know you're a Dem. So obviously you've got the freedom of Florida, bar the schooling bit. You pretty much can go to Florida, you can go to a restaurant, you can go wherever you want. How did it feel to have those freedoms taken away from you when you were in California?
I was taking one for the team.
So you're admitting your freedoms were infringed upon in California.
So I didn't really feel it. What was really interesting is maybe because, you know, here in Florida, we've been getting back out there and we've been, you know, going to the theme parks, going and eating. We haven't really eaten in restaurants that much in Florida yet, but you've been getting out into the real world. California still isn't really there yet. So it was really quiet, which, you know, anyone who's been to California knows how packed it is everywhere. So it was really one kind of surreal how quiet it was going out, eating, going to like some of our favorite spots out in LA. Really eerie. You know, you walk down Santa Monica, which is usually jam packed. You know, I took some pictures with the only people out.
So we
had the place to ourselves.
They're killing your favorite state, basically. Yeah.
You know, I think I enjoyed it, but I don't know how sustainable it is.
Yeah, no, they're fucked. You know, like I always said, look, this is my advice to all my liberal friends, and I have a few in California. We welcome you to Florida. Just do us a favor. Don't bring your voting with you, all right? we enjoy our freedoms in Florida. And guess what Florida has right now? Pretty much herd immunity. The world was screaming at us for the last 2 months, and pretty much they're saying now Florida, half of the 20 million, they pretty much think have had it. And we're now right down on everything. Infections, hospitalizations is good news. And we've looked after the elderly. So, you know, without actually having too many of those rights taken away, Florida pretty much can get over this now and get on with life.
Well, they're sending us from California to Florida one person at a time, one vote at a time.
Oh, no.
So I'm one of the advanced party, I think.
But it's nice, though, isn't it, to be home and know that, you know, it's look, California's gorgeous. And I said that to you before. I looked to move out there until I looked into it more. But it really is. And this goes for any place that's locked up still. It's horrible. You know what I mean? If you're one of the 60 million people that live there, you've got a business that's gone under. I mean, you can do nothing now but pull your hair out and feel sorry. I feel blessed. I don't own a load of restaurants. I don't own a load of businesses that are like hospitality based, because I would be committing Harry Carey right now, because I'd be just like, you know, I can't open my businesses. I can't go about life. They don't try to do things safely. It must be so. I can only imagine the angst, the depression, the frustration for anyone that owns a business that's basically told they're not allowed to open it. There must be the worst feeling in the world, to be fair.
No, I mean, you walk down some of the high streets that we walk down, or the American equivalent of the high street, and just they're all shuttered. You know, there's just all these stores, and I don't know how they can reopen. It's
horrible.
I mean, yeah, it's tragic.
They're not going to, some of them. I had a friend up there who had two car garages. He sold cars, and he was very successful, and he's lost them. He stopped paying the bills 2 months ago. I had another friend who owned a massive restaurant that was taking in like $5 million a year, but to take five, you know, their overheads were like three a year. And again, like, you know, in tatters, and they're just speaking to me, and they're just like, they've lost so much weight from stress. So anyone out there who's lost their business or their livelihood, my thoughts are with you. You know, what we've done to ourselves in 2020, and what, you look at Britain the other day, I think they're $2 trillion in debt. And, you know, I see all the headlines, and you want to scream and go, and you wonder why. And yeah, you know, it's just horrific what's happened to people's economies. So please bring on 2021 and enough of this lockdown madness. Yeah. We've got to get past this now, haven't we?
So let's talk some football.
Absolutely.
So you had training camp last week. We talked about going into training camp. You spent the week at St. George's. Some pretty nice digs by the looks of it. So how did it go?
Yeah, look, it wasn't Portugal or Spain where we usually like to go to. And to be fair, I didn't know what to expect. I hadn't been before. The facilities are magnificent. Now, look, it cost us like 40 grand for the week, which would to go abroad. So it wasn't cheap. But the staff looked after us brilliantly. There was only us and one of them. I think the other team was Barnsley, and they were in a different hotel. And the hotel, the staff from the people who looked after us, and we had our own suite area for dining every night where food was served in a buffet. And we had a massive big room with tables all socially distanced. And then you had like 10 Sky TVs. The great thing was all the cricket, your sports. I was staying in, obviously, the Sir Bobby Charlton suite, which was the presidential suite in the hotel. Fantastic. They couldn't do enough for us. And look, you had to wear a mask when you got into reception. Fair due, no problem at all. The odd time you walk, you'd have an ask, Matt, he'd come on top of you and go, where's your mask? And you're like, check, you're pulling it out. You know? And that was fine. I understood the rules because they're abiding by laws to stay open. But I thought, you know, they were classy the way they handled it. It was magnificent. I couldn't speak highly enough. I went around and said thank you to the waitresses, the chef, all the people who'd looked after us. And they said, oh, your footballers are so lovely. And they're almost surprised. I'm like, look, don't read into everything you read about footballers. Most footballers are great people. They're normal people like the rest of us. It's not all the horrible stories you read, orgies and sex and drugs and stuff. And I have to say, Phil, the food, I'm now starting my diet today. Because, and to be fair, I skipped breakfast purposely because I knew every morning, even though you'd have your bacon, sausage, eggs, and the healthy options and your All Bran or your Weetabix, I would have dove in and had a fry up every morning. And I stayed out because lunchtime was like soup and bread. I love a warm roll. I have three of them. And then it's like pasta, steak, fish. And I was going up for three helpings. And I was like, you know, lunch was at like 11, 12 o'clock. Dinner was at 7 o'clock. I ate so much, I swear to you, my stomach, I was in pain when I left on Saturday. But the only thing I missed was, you know, when we go to Spain or Portugal, usually at night, the management team, we'll have a bit of a quiz night, we'll sit out on the terrace, we'll be able to, because the top warm, you sit outside, you have a little bit of banter, you know, a little bit of repertoire and all of that. And you couldn't really do it there. They had a terrace outside, but it was next to the bar. They didn't really serve out there. So it was kind of, I know that sounds spoiled and everything else, but that was probably the only thing missing, but the games were brilliant. We played Stoke. That was really good. It was really funny because we probably played one of our strongest sides against Stoke under 23s. And then we played Derby first team the following day. And you know, with a lot of our young players, I said to the manager, fuck me, you'd think it would have been the other way around. Do you know what I mean? But to be fair, at this stage, you're getting everyone the 90 minutes. And you had 11 get 90 minutes on Tuesday, 11 get 90 on Wednesday. We had an in-house game on Saturday. And that was a high-scoring game. And again, they got, I think, 90 minutes. And the whole idea was to get fit, touch wood, no injuries, no issues. And again, it was a big area ticked in the box. So you won't find me say anything negative about St. George's, and very thankful to Stoke and Derby for coming. And great place. Absolutely superb.
Sounds like next time you need to get your fitness coach or Darren Ferguson to be giving you the runaround as well, so you can burn your 20,000 calories.
To be fair, we've got a great sports scientist, and you know, he had given me a lot of stuff to do before, but I diet my own weird way. Like today, for me now, for the next 30 days, it'll be no bread, no carbs, no drinks. It'll just be basically like, you know, your fish, your steaks, that kind of stuff, and turkey, lots of turkey for the next 30 days, and I'll do 15 pounds. So that'll do me. That's fine. Like I said to you last week, you got to enjoy yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm watching your players do 20 miles a day and burn off thousands of calories. You know, you can get quite hungry watching all of that. So, but now, you know, I met with the captain, the vice captain. You talk about bonuses and what's coming up for the season. I had a great chat with all the lads. It was a really, really positive week, to be fair.
So what's next for the rest of preseason? I mean, we're kicking off in 10 days or so, which is great.
We have Colchester tomorrow night. We have 2 19 games, 1 at 5 and 1 at 7. It's the first stadium game we've done since March. So that's in a stadium, which is really good. Colchester is a great setup. We have a championship football side, their strongest 11 on Saturday, which is in our home stadium. We've had our stadium. We've had storm damage. We've had flooding.
So now we saw some of that.
Yeah. Now we have the expense of that, which is, you need that like a kick in the bollocks. But we got, I call her Minnie Dunn. She's in charge of all operations and she's brilliant. She'll get all of that repaired and fixed. And so that's our first home stadium game on Saturday. And then obviously, I think it's the following week's Cheltenham in the Cup to start with. So we get all the games out of the way, and then the manager gives the players a good week of no game time, then just, you know, finessing that fitness and making sure everyone, the bumps and bruises are okay. And then we go into the season, and we've got two cup games and a league game in a 7-day stretch. So exciting stuff, to be fair.
Yeah, it's going to start coming thick and fast. We've had, six months nearly of no football, and now it's going to be twice a week
for
the next 7 or 8 months.
Hell yeah.
So how was the fixture list for you, you know, in terms of looking at the games that you're not going to have behind closed doors and the big games later in the season? Were you pretty happy?
I knew we'd get away games. You always look for the perfect trifecta. You want to be home first, you want to be home last game of the season, and you want to be home on Boxing Day. If you can strike those three, it's great, usually financially, and also to start at home. And I knew we'd get fucked. And lo and behold, we're away first, we're away on Boxing Day, we're away last. The only positive was a lot of the bigger gauged games that you'd earn good money in. You know, your Sunderland at home, the Cobblers, our big derby game at home.
Yeah.
They're like 100 grand paydays. They're in the second half of the year. And fuck me, I'm not back to full stadiums by then. I give up. I'm leaving. Maybe I'll move to Mars. Do you know what I mean? To get away from this COVID hysteria as well on that side of things. So I look at it and go, yeah, financially that could do us good, because we've under budgeted for games. So now that we've got in the tank, and that's no disrespect to Fleetwood, who were playing at home early on, but Fleetwood, no, they'd probably bring 50 fans if they came to us. We'd go to them. So it's not a big money earner. So they're the games possibly you want to have before Christmas. And then we have, I think, a couple of big home games at the end of December. Again, you'd like to think maybe you're up towards the 50% in crowds by then. So, I like to think baby steps in a positive way. We're getting back to where we need to be. You know, you look at all the stuff in the UK and everything seems to be very positive. So there's no reason fans, in my opinion, shouldn't be back in from the first game. To an extent. But look, I can moan about the fixture list, but here's the reality. We've got to play everyone twice. Doesn't matter when you play them. Akron and Stanley won't be easy because it's always tough going up there. John Coleman, in fairness, he gets his teams playing really well the last few years since he's been there. They'll probably sign players we won't know about. So you'll have the unknown factor as well with the players they do have. Everyone will always go, oh, games like Akron, you know, they're not bankers on anyone's coupon card.
I can tell you, they've been our bogey team, like in League Two. You show up, you get relegated to League Two, and you think, Accrington?
Yeah.
And they just do you.
No, but they're a really good club. And you know, we played them last year. And we were lucky at our place. We got a win. We were comfortable at their place. But they weren't easy games. No games like that. And if you want to win promotions, they are the games you have to win. And nothing would shock me about them being top half of the table this year. So, you know, they're a settled football club and they've got a settled manager who knows now League One. He's been here 2 years. So he knows what he's doing. So that's a toughie. You know, you get your fans like, oh, you know, you're going to go there and you're going to smash them. You know, that's not how football works. If our players aren't on it, they'll lose. So they've got to be on it, and you got to show respect to the opposition. There's no point in showing up against Portsmouth and not showing up against someone else. You have to be on it, and consistency is the key, I guess, this season. But fixture-wise, I couldn't give a shit. I just want games to start.
And you got Swindon first, by the looks of it, for being able to get fans back in the ground.
Oh, yes, possibly, yes. Yeah. That'd be a good one.
When do you get to know? Like, because everyone's talking about this October the 3rd, I think, week of fixtures. I mean, when are they going to make a decision?
Your guess is as good as mine, pal. You know, I've been saying this. Obviously, I did a thing with the Sun the other day. I've done some media. It would be great to get some notice. You know, government, you know, you're $2 trillion in debt. The football industry brings a lot of money to the British government. Like, you know, get your head out of your asses. You know, start looking at this and go, we need to get live events back on, particularly outdoor events. And there is no reason, the statistics, the data tells you they should be back. So I don't know. I mean, if they tell us tomorrow, we're ready. We'll get ready. Whatever we've got to do, we'll get ready. But again, a little bit of notice, some protocol on it would be good in advance.
Yeah, well, that'll help everybody actually do what they need to do properly, you know.
Phil, you know, you will actually sell more season tickets. If they come out tomorrow and go October the 1st, definite fans back. We will probably sell at least another 500 grand's worth of season tickets because they're the people to get into the games. So that revenue for League One and League, because we're not getting this bailout any day soon, that revenue is fucking massive for any club. So what are we waiting for?
Good question. So in the meantime, we got to put up, well, I say put up with, and I say that flippantly because it's actually, we've talked about it being a godsend for us expats. We have iFollow to look forward to. How are you doing that? Are you doing season tickets for iFollow? You're selling your season tickets, but giving people access to iFollow for the first few games?
So we'll have codes for the season ticket holders for those first few games they're going to miss. Yeah. That will be their way to watch it. Normal fans can be normal. You'd like to think your iFollow revenue will be up this year, because if you are on limited capacity, you'd like to think you're going to get a couple of thousand, you know, on the day buyers. I think it's too cheap. It's always been my opinion. Mm-hmm. iFollow, particularly, like, you'd have 3-4 people in a room watching a game. So, yeah. So iFollow, listen, great technology. Could do with loads of improvements. It probably will as we go through the cycle over the next year or two. Everything always improves year on year. But I've certainly enjoyed watching from afar in America using it.
Yeah, what's the deal then from a commercial perspective? I mean, are you, does it go revenue share based on all the different clubs using iFollow? Do you get compensated based on how many folks of your supporters are signing up?
Yeah, so if you bought on match day through our iFollow system, I think it's 70-30, 70 to us, 30 iFollow itself. I could be wrong on that, but it's pretty much in that wheelhouse there, 70-30. Mm-hmm. We generate, I don't know, 20 grand from a match day, a home game, 14 grand for us. If you go and buy another club to watch us, that other club will get the revenue. So that's always, I think, the grainy area. So you'd always say to your fans, like, use our iPod.
Sign up through us.
Whatever else, yeah. So it's definitely an area there that will help, you know, particularly for the bigger clubs. I would imagine, you know, the Sunderlands of the world who have 30,000 people who can't go. I mean, if you get all of them paying a tenner a ticket, I mean, that's 300 grand for an iFollow game. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's some serious revenue right there. We don't have that kind of fan base, but we have a loyal fan base, but not to that level.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're ended up doing at Bradford is. Mm-hmm. Our season tickets finally went until today, actually, Monday, as we're recording this. And, you know, everybody will, the way they're going to do it is basically, you know, we had 12,000-13,000 season ticket holders. We got 7,000 allowed back in the ground. Yeah. So they're going to give everyone basically, you can see half the games. So there's a claret package and an amber package for us just based on our colors. You know, you get allocated one of those. Yeah. That says which games you can go to, and then you get iFollow for the other games.
Okay, that's good. That's impressive.
And it's kind of all a single price.
Yeah, no, that's great. You've got a great fan base then.
Yeah, and we'll get plenty of people signing up on iFollow, I imagine. So, you know, for us, we're going to need it, you know, until we get back to 75% capacity.
I would imagine your club's going to be in good shape financially this season, you know, with the salary cap, with a lot of players now left, Vaughan included, a lot of the big players. I would imagine financially the club should be in pretty decent shape by the time crowds are back properly. So that's one thing to be optimistic about, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the noises coming out of the club, I don't worry about us financially. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of teams in a lot worse situation. We have an owner who's willing to invest and to cover shortfalls, you know, even though he's kind of a silent owner, but he's been doing that. You know, they've talked as a club about, you know, we're a good few players under the salary cap if we need to bring people in. Yeah. So I think that we'll see what happens, you know, when we get on the pitch. But from a financial perspective, there's a lot of teams in a lot worse situation than us, I think, right now.
Without doubt. You know, throughout the leagues, I think we know. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a really interesting few months. It'll be interesting also for the managers that are waiting for jobs. Usually in any given season, if you've lost your job in the summer and you're a good manager, you usually November time, the phone starts ringing. So basically, right. The season's probably 2 months old, 10 weeks old, 12 weeks old. People start losing jobs. So that golden period is probably the last 2 weeks of October, first 2 weeks of November. I don't know if you go back through the data, but I would imagine 7, 8, 9 jobs suddenly.
Don't go on vacation if you're an out-of-work manager during that period of time.
Absolutely. So that would probably be delayed because the season's the start of September.
Yeah.
But I would imagine don't make any Christmas plans if you're planning to go back into management because there'll be probably a lot of jobs available then.
So you going into the transfer window, again, we're recording this on Monday, so you made an announcement of a new player, Ryan Broom from Cheltenham, today.
Yep.
How did that all come about?
We tried to sign Ryan in January and he had a big release clause, and it wasn't an issue for us at the time. The real issue was the personal terms. And, you know, I've known his agent for a long time, but, you know, his agent, obviously, like all agents, likes a pound note. and he thought his player should get a lot more, and it was out of our salary realm. So what happened was, we were made aware this summer it would be a lot more reasonable to do the deal, call it maybe a post-pandemic, you know, deal. So Cheltenham were brilliant to deal with. We approached them. We met their figure they wanted. We did that business. The agent and the player were very reasonable, you know, and the player wanted to come. He was always on our manager's list. We needed two tens. He was always one of them. He can also play wing back. He can play as a winger. He can play in a 3, in a 4-2-3-1. He's very versatile. He's technically very good. He's defensively very strong. Loads of improvement in him. He's not a finished article, even at 23. And that's our job now at Peterborough, to polish him up, make him play to our system. But a terrific young man, and desperate to come and join us. So we've been working on that for a couple of weeks. There was no rush. There are things going on. We still have players we need to move on, you know, to make gaps in there, in certain positions. Because at the end of the day, the cutoff date comes close, you know, for your 25 man, the salary cap and the squad. And we will be leaving people out of that squad to make the salary cap work. And those players have to find new clubs, and they're going to be on the transfer list. So that's just the science of the salary cap and the business itself.
So you gave a 3-year deal, which, you know, when you think about a lot of League One and League Two teams, we're dealing on 1-year contracts, 2-year contracts, and 3-year contracts seem like a bit more of a risk. So what gives you the confidence? And I think I know how you're going to answer this, but, you know, you're offering 3-year deals, which I know from Bradford's perspective, when we've done that, we've ended up regretting it, you know, 12 months in. So
sure,
is there more of a risk factor involved in that?
There isn't. You have to go risk, you know, reward. And basically, if you pay good money for a player, six figures, you're not going to give them a 2-year fucking deal. So they're in 12 months for
walk out the door. Yeah.
Walk out the door. So when we pay money for a player, we tend to do 3 years or 4-year deals with a 1-year option, which protects us. So if we sign a free transfer, and usually somebody from, say, a Premier League club, because I'm a bit like that with Premier League youngsters at times, we've been burnt before, we usually do a two plus one. Mm-hmm. So there is a science to how we do the contracts. Now, in the event it doesn't come off, Ryan or whoever we bring in, if it's an affordable contract, we feel, well, okay, what's the risk? Can we get them on loan and get their wages paid? Can we, you know, Callum Cook bring them free?
Yep.
We got him to Bradford, your club, they paid his wages, he's now gone. You know, so there's always an element of risk, but you have to weigh up the pros and the cons. And a player like Ryan Broom, there's no point in paying a figure for him. And then again, in a year's time, we have a problem with a contract. So, you know, that we as a club take that stance. A lot of our players are on 3-year deals. And right now, we're on a year or 2 years. I'll be looking to negotiate with them January time to be ahead of the game. Because I don't like ever being in a weak negotiation position with a player, particularly if they're running down a contract, and particularly if they're flying. If a player's flying and the contract's running down, then you're on the arse end of it. And you don't want to be on the arse end of that negotiation. So it's imperative that you look after your assets. Like, we have a couple of our youngsters who you're only allowed to sign them on a 3-year deal when they turn 17. In an ideal world, it would be 3 plus 2, 3-year with a 2-year option. So what I'll do with some of those starlets is 18 months into the contract or a year into the contract, once they hit 18, I can sign them on a longer contract. I will rip it up and we'll do a new one. And that, again, is called protecting your assets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess what separates you a little bit from a lot of teams in League One and League Two is you're actually out there paying fees.
Correct.
Whereas certainly a lot of teams at this level are looking at picking up free transfers for the most part.
Some people will prefer to pay more on wages and no fee. We always go the other way. We prefer to pay a fee for a gem and pay less wages. You know, players don't come to us to get rich straight away. Players come to us with the pipe dream of getting weighed in for 30, 40 grand a week when they leave us. They understand we give them an opportunity to do their stuff, win stuff for us, and put themselves in a window. And because of our record and being the deal makers we are and have been for over 11, 12 years in the transfer market, you know, some of these strikers should be paying me, by the way. I always laugh.
It's a pretty proven path that you've got going there.
Are you kidding me? If you're a good striker and you don't come and make it big at Peterborough, that's on you, not us. We give you the platform. Yeah. We play the football. It's all about scoring goals. So, you know, to be arguing about money and wages is pretty ridiculous when you think about what some of the strikers have gone on to earn that have left us after 18 months. Ivan being the next one who's going to be made for life. that's just the way it goes in football. So any strikers listening to this out there that we might be talking to, and let your agent blow it for you. Remember that. And don't forget my fee, all right, for putting you in that window. I'm joking.
It's like renting space in the supermarket. You're a big brand. You rent space from them, so you're in the shop window. Versus the other way around.
I want us to get to the stage where we can get to the championship and have a bit more time with some of the players, because, you know, it will be life-changing for our club. Ivan Toney would have been a 20, 25 million pound sale. And 20, 25 million for us on our facilities and our academy and paying our debt and putting ourselves, that is just for a Peterborough United. It's the fees we get in League One, incredible. No one does what we do. We are the deal makers. But in the championship, you see Brentford, that's our model. That's what we do. We get the same fees. So that would just set us up for a long period of time. So that's the key for us. We've got to get to the champ.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So I picked out some stats from Experimental 361, who put some great data together around, you know, really all certainly Championship, League One, League Two. And there's the stat that came out, and I'm kind of looking down at in front of me, was squad churn. I'm looking at different squads within League One and League Two, and where your squad is today versus how many minutes those players played last season to show how much churn you have within the squad. And for Peterborough, you're top of the league in terms of 84% of minutes from last season are your squad players this year. You know, and the vast majority are here in the 60s, 50s, 40s, Lincoln 25%. You know, you stand out in terms of having players that you don't have that much churn, so you're only adding a player or two here. I mean, I imagine that's by design and one of the things that kind of separates you from the rest of the teams in the league.
Continuity was key. We went through a period there a couple of years ago where we were bringing in 15 new players every window. And it's just, there's no continuity. And it was a conscious decision by me on the recruitment side last summer. We were going to put together a squad we felt could grow, and it would be a four in, four out type process, maximum five, which would mean every summer for the next 2-3 years, five would go, five would come in, kind of thing. And we feel, our last game was a 2-0 win against Portsmouth. I'd be shocked if eight, if not nine of the starting 11 that played in that game weren't in the first game of the season. I'm not the manager, whatever he picks, but we will have a strong core defensively, golden boot winner, or golden gloves winner, you know, players throughout the squad. We have younger players that are now a year older. We've brought in players. We've brought in a new goalie. You know, we've brought in, obviously, a young centre half. We've brought in an extra central midfielder for competition in there. And obviously, we're bringing in a couple of 10s and potentially a striker. Mm-hmm. So from a continuity point of view, we're in a really good place. Now, I'm hoping that pays off. You like to think it pays off. Hopefully, you know, that favours us. Who knows? You know, but it's going to be a weird summer, because I looked last week at all the business being done by our rivals, competitors. There isn't that much business being done. So, I know they've lost players, but there hasn't been that many replacements brought in. It's going to be really, I think, until October, no one's really going to know how teams look. It doesn't matter about September. The window closes in October. I think there's going to be a mad dash probably the last 2 weeks of September. And there's probably going to be more Premier League youngsters coming into League One, which is a bit of a shame because there's a lot of unemployed footballers out there. But if agents and players who are holding out for deals, you know, the penny fucking drops, maybe they'll get back into work. But I know that for a fact there's some out there who think like Brewster's billions are coming and they're going to, you know, they're not living in fucking today's reality. And sometimes that could be my biggest criticism of footballers and agents. They're a little bit devoid of reality when it comes to the financial stuff. And with the pandemic and everything going on, it's kind of like wake the fuck up time. You know, so if you're a footballer and you get to September and the league starts and you're still not training with a club, your value is going to actually drop even more. So if you're offered 1,500 quid a week now, you'd be lucky to get 800 quid a week then, because salary caps would be full, squads would be full, there'd be less competition for your services, and you're going to get thrown token amounts. Like, our
manager, you want a job? I'll pay you a bit to have a job, basically.
That's the market. It's, you know, it's you look at economics. That's just the basic it. You know, our manager said if when we're finished the window and we've got everyone out and everyone in, you know, he may look for potentially, not necessarily, an extra defender. You know, as cover. And I said, look, hold your horses, relax. Wait till the window closes, because after the window closes, you're going to have a lot of players who are basically not on the scrap heap, but they're unemployed. And you can sign free signings outside of the window. Yeah. And really, if you've got room in your salary cap, you know, you can do that. So you'll probably pick up a good defender who his market value might have been 2 grand in June and July. And by the time that happens, he'd be looking to get 800 quid a week plus appearance fee. So, you know, that's players allowing that to happen by holding out now. You know, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because at that point, they just need a, they need a game so that they can come back next year and not be another unemployed footballer this time next year.
Correct, correct. So, you know, my advice to the players out there who are holding on, you know, you got to get some reality in there. You know, you got to set your expectations lower because it's a whole new world. And I know that I've got so many agents I talk to, and they're bringing players to clubs where last year they were got $4,000 a week. They're now getting $1,600-1,700 a week.
Mm-hmm.
That is just the new reality. And by the way, that's normal for everyone out there. That's even people at normal jobs who've lost jobs and now going back into new jobs. You know what I mean? That is the horrific reality for the next couple of years because of this stupid pandemic. And
it's supply and demand, unfortunately.
Supply and demand, Phil. You're in the business. You know it yourself. When the furloughs end, you will see companies get rid of thousands, if not millions. Yeah. And that's just the way.
Yeah. You know, in our... in the kind of business side of what I do, you know, that's one of the things that we see is that you have all these corporate budgets right now that people have tried to put every last pound or dollar into saving as many people as they possibly can. And they did that through now. And now the penny's dropping and they're going through 2021 budget planning, realizing that that's not sustainable. You know, and I fear for what that means as people are kind of resetting budgets for next year.
Ruthless is going to be the key word because you're going to have to be ruthless. And unfortunately, that is just the way it is. I hate the word new normal. I just think it's a 24-month horrific period we're probably going to go through worldwide. It's the worst hasn't come yet. And I don't want to sound like Mr. Negative. People would be like, listen, just going, oh, you're wrong. Unfortunately, I've been through a couple of cycles now. The experience tells you what's coming. We're going to be on our arses for a while. So we're going to have to fight a bit harder. And that goes for everyone out there who loses a job. You're just going to have to graft a bit more and you might have to do some extra work or take extra jobs for a while. It's going to be a little bit of pain, short-term pain, and eventually for the long-term gain.
So last question on transfer window and why things may be slower. I mean, could one of those reasons be, and I'm really just speculating here, that clubs just don't want to carry those wage costs right now. So they want to wait as long as they possibly can before they start carrying some of those costs when they've been letting go a bunch of people over the summer.
Sure. You got a budget. Like our budget usually is from June until the following May. So if I budget a player, I don't know, $70,000 a year. If I end up signing a player in September, I can maybe pay him a bit more wages and still get into my $70,000 for that year. So, you know, there could be a bit of that, an element of that, people waiting. I know with like the Prem and some of the Champ clubs, some of them were back late because of the playoffs. A lot of the recruitment planning is only really starting now. You know, there won't be a lot of deals done. You know, it might not be today or tomorrow, but there will be a lot of deals done. And there'll definitely, like I said to you, a lot of loans are going to get done. It'll probably be the busiest transfer deadline day in years.
Yeah.
People will wait till last minute to try and do deals.
We'll have to do a live podcast through transfer deadline day.
You know, listen, you're going to have to speak to Sky and a few others who want my services that day, Philip.
Yeah, I bet. see how high the we come on the totem pole.
Yeah.
I don't have much money I can give you.
Listen, any sponsor out there wants to sponsor the show? You contact, yeah? We've turned down a couple of sponsors. We didn't fancy calling the podcast The Hard Dildo Truth. So you
still have Vibrator. Still open.
Exactly, the right brand.
All right, well, let me take a break and I'll come back. You talked about loans there. We've actually got some listener questions. I'm going to start off with loans. So I'll be back in a moment.
Let's do it.
So welcome back, everybody. I want to go now into some Q&A. We've had, again, lots of questions, and I encourage you to keep on sending them through to us. The first set of questions is actually from Gordon Donovan. Gordon is a Man City fan in Melbourne, in Australia. And actually, Gordon had some questions about the loan system, which I thought tied in quite nicely to the conversation that we just had. And kind of the first question around the loan system from Gordon was, do you find that Premiership clubs are actually offering their players around, like the young players that are in their system, to lower leagues? Or is it more a case of you actually going and scouting those under 23, those academy systems, and knowing the players that you want and trying to bring those in?
A lot of Prem clubs have like it's like a loan manager whose job is in recruitment to basically get out, whore out basically all the young kids, you know, without sounding rude.
And making money while doing it.
That's what they try and do. You know, they'll ring your club, they'll ring Barry Fry and say, look, we've got, you know, two boys at Man City, we've got a boy at Liverpool, we've got whatever. We want to get them game time, we do a deal. you're updating those people on their progress every month. You know, they'll want the manager to update them. You know, they need to know why they play games, blah, 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 blah. You also have managers, like my manager will go to the under 21, under 23 games, and they'll see some of the younger kids. You play a checker trade game, you'll see a youngster. You'll ring the club and go, are they available for loan? You know, we've got Mark Robson, who's been working in the England under 20s, under 19s, under 18s. So his knowledge of all the best youngsters at Prem Club, you ask him about any player, he'll say, our player is that behind that player and blah, 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 blah. And he's really good. And he'll know the characters, their personalities. So that's how it works in general. You also have agents. I had an agent today. He had a youngster at his Newcastle. But as a kid, you know, he's done this, he's done that. There's a CV. He was abroad. He spent a year on loan. He's ready for league football. And I said, look, we're not in a position for that. We don't have space for that position. But best of luck. So you've got three different things. You've got agents. You got your own manager going to games. And you've got the clubs themselves with their recruitment manager, per se. Yeah. It works in that.
It's interesting that you have agents involved in that. So that you would have his owner club would have basically said, hey, if you can go find somewhere on loan, go and do it. And then it ties to the agent to go and find them something, get him fixed up, rather than him sitting around in the under 23s or the under 18s or whatever it is all season.
If you're a really good agent, I've always said this, like, I would have made a hell of an agent. Like, you know, I would have been Jerry Maguire on steroids, you know, as an agent. And God help anyone negotiating with me in a boardroom. I laugh. But I would have a young stable of young, talented, you know, youth team players at all clubs. And my job would always be every year, speak to the manager and say, look, are they involved this year? Or do you want them out on loan? And I'd want that decision pretty early in pre-season. And then my job would be to go out and get my players game times, because some of these youngsters need to play 40, 50 games and then they become men and learn their trade and their craft and hone their craft and whatever else. So that's key. Any good agent worth his salt is trying to get his players out. I wouldn't want my youngsters in my stable playing under 23 Premier League football. It's a waste of fucking time. It's a waste of time. I've seen those players come to our door. It's a waste of time. If they haven't played real football, waste of time. You know, and I'll give an example. We had Ben White. He'd been out the year before to Newport. That's why we took him. And that Newport loan, it was Newport. That Newport loan was brilliant for him, and he was ready for League One. And he spent a year with us. Then he went to the Championship. And he's had a year with, you know, the mighty Leeds, who won the league.
Yeah.
Now he's worth 30, 40 million. So that loan has made Brighton a fucking fortune. And I don't think he's ever kicked off for Brighton's first team. So they've suddenly got a player. You know, what a story that is. So that's where
it works. Who could have just sat in the under 23s.
Right.
And done nothing.
Yeah. And now his agent's going to make millions. The player's going to make millions. Brighton could potentially make millions. And that right there is where the system works. And I always remember negotiating with Brighton, because he was obviously on a decent wage. And we were fighting over, you know, wages, paying less, accommodation. But he still cost us probably 100 grand in wages pieces. And now we've played a part and been worth 30-odd million quid. And that's what I've always argued about. Premier League clubs shouldn't be allowed to charge us what they charge us. Now, Brighton were good to us. We didn't pay us full wages. But I still argue it should have been a lot less. Yeah. That's for prayer. If I'm a Premier League club, if Peterborough United, and you know, I'll say a prayer, become a Premier League club, I would want our best young players playing Championship, League One football, and the ones maybe not so good, League Two, non-league. And the idea that I would charge them, I would just want them to play. And that's it. That would be key to me. I've got these 10 young players. I want to get 500 games amongst the 10 of them. How am I going to make that happen? Who are the clubs I can deal with who play good football, similar formation to us, good philosophy? Let's get them out. Because that's key. Get them out. You know, we've got a couple of youngsters now that we're going to put out in non-league. And the wage isn't really important. What's important is their progress in playing.
Yeah. Now, how much does the loan fee come into it as well? Is there a loan fee for every loan? Is it just, you know, some of the bigger clubs that are asking for that?
Back in the day, you know, United tried to hit us for loan fees. And that was even when the icon himself was in charge. And I had a son work. So that wasn't his decision. That was the club policy. So, you know, I fought against that. I don't want to pay loan fees. You know, we had recent Premier League players we've had on loan, we've had to put promotion bonuses in. So not only are we paying wages, we've had like 20, 30 grand promotion bonuses. That makes me fucking sick. I have to be honest, I apologize for the language, but I just think it's like, you know, and you look at it and you go, Christ, I'm already paying a big wage. I'm accommodating the player. And now I've got to give a promotion bonus.
It's basically a full transfer, but with them getting the right to take him back at the end of the season.
And by the way, some of the agents want paid as well. So you've got agents who want to be paid for their players on loan. So the whole loan system as it is, and I've been arguing to rip up the script on this for 2 years. I've gone to EFL meetings. I've stood in the room. I've told everyone we should hold out for a window. We should be doing this like together. But as we've seen recently with votes and everything else, there is no together. The only way we fix the loan system is us as an EFL saying, fuck off, no more loan players until you go by our rules. And I'll say the rules again. For League One, 600 quid a week wage max. No accommodation. Mm-hmm. The club you're loaning from the Prem, if they're big enough, will pay the accommodation. League One will be 1,300 quid a week. Again, it's a 9-month loan. No more of this 11-month shit. Because I've had Premier League clubs charge us a loan, put a promotion bonus in, charge us a hefty wage, and want us to pay all the way through June and July for that player, even though they go back in May. That's wrong. Right. That's wrong. Mm-hmm. That's wrong in a trillion-dollar industry. That's fucking morally wrong. And now with the pandemic, it's wrong more than ever. And those rules, and again, I've been arguing since March, why haven't we done that? Why has that loan deal not happened? And I came up with a whole draft system for all the youngsters that Sky could have filmed. I put it out on Twitter a couple of years ago. I went on TalkSport to talk about it. And that would be brilliant for young players in the UK.
That would be fascinating. Yeah.
I was like, let's do a draft system every summer. We'll have one day on TV. Every club in League One and League Two gets two picks. The worst club from the year before will get the two best picks.
Mm-hmm.
And those players, suddenly their names will be in lights. They will be known. We don't have to pay any wages. And they play in your team. Now, if you sign up for the draft and you pick two, you have to play the two in your squad. They have to play a certain amount of games. So you have the choice of signing in for it or not signing in for it. But if you're not in it, you won't get these young players. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whoever was the worst team in League One last year would get two United players or two Arsenal players. You know what I mean? Look, there was intricacies that need to be worked out because someone from Man City at the time said, well, we don't want two of our players going to a shit team in League Two. Well, okay, get over the arrogance. It's about getting game time for some of those players. And some of those players won't make it at Man City or Liverpool or United. So you give them a chance then to get a career, you know, and sign for a club and have a good career in the Football League. So I just wanted it fixed. I've been screaming for it. It's still not fixed. And again, during the pandemic, I felt with like 6 months downtime of people not being fully back at work, this was something we could have all worked out and figured out. Now with the salary place, it would be perfect as well. But it's still not done. And you're still left at, is Barry Fry good enough to do a deal with a top
player?
Yes, he is, thankfully. But not everyone has that luxury. Not everyone negotiates like we do. So you're going to have clubs having to pay the piper and pay for accommodation and pay promotion bonuses. And it's really, really frustrating. You know, particularly when a League One club gets £1 million in TV money and a Premier League club gets 250 million. You put that up there on a screen and you would call that grotesque.
I'm sure it comes down to relationships then. You know, it's, do you have a reputation for nurturing this talent? And if you do, then you get a little bit of leeway on the negotiation. And if you don't, then they'll hit you with whatever they can get from you.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell a story a few years ago. I mean, we had, when we got Britta Malonga, Watford didn't want to sell him. They wanted us to have him on loan. They were practically going to pay us to have him on loan because of what we do. And we do get Prem clubs try and get strikers into us on loan. And it's not something I do. I don't think it suits our club. It's not financially. You know, if we had a player come in last year on loan and win the Golden Boot, he's worth nothing to us and he's worth millions to that club. So for me, I don't sign strikers usually on loan unless there's an option to buy them. So in the end, I was like, I'm not taking them on loan. And we paid over the top for him because we knew it was the only way we could get him. We had to make a silly offer to get him. We made a silly offer and it worked for them. It worked for us. So there is that as well. You know what I mean? Like, we've had clubs recently, like a couple of big championship clubs offer us strikers that have been in League One on loan. And they're like, look, you know, take them on loan. You don't have to pay us much because they know if a striker comes and does it at Peterborough, they can probably shell them out the door for like 6 million next year. Well, no thanks. We're good. We have our way of doing things. So, you know, usually when we do loans, it's usually defense, midfield, that kind of thing. Never really up front. It's never really worked well for us per se as a club.
You want to own your strikers.
Always, baby. I'm giving away some tips of the trade here, shouldn't we?
Mm-hmm. are there typically requirements on how many games you got to play loan players, or is that just all part of the negotiation?
No, they'll try that. They'll say you're paying £2,000 a week. If you don't play them, you're going to pay double. They will try and impose things on you. I'm not a massive fan of loans. Now, in fairness, we brought Reece Brown back on loan. He's not a Premier League player, but yeah, he's Huddersfield's player. And he was a really important part for us last year. And Huddersfield were really, really good about the process. We've paid a fair shilling for him, which is fair due because they're not a Premier League club. And, you know, they would wanted us to have maybe bought him. But because of his salary and the salary cap, we couldn't make it work. People have asked, why didn't you buy Reece Brown? We would have. But we just, Reece isn't really a drop. He's on a good contract in the Championship. So he has a family. And I understand that. So for now, it suits us to have him on loan. And we go up, we do a deal. Do you know what I mean? So that was one of them where we would have loved to have taken him full-time, 100%.
And it's interesting you then end up getting these loans that you loan them for a couple of years. We've done that as well. They effectively become your player, but you're getting them on for much less than you would have to pay for them if you were going to buy them outright.
Yeah, we had another scenario was we had a top seven Premier League club bid us millions for one of our young starlets. And they were like, and in the end I said, look, if you're going to buy him and we do a deal, it's this amount, but I also want the player back for a two-year loan. So you can sign the player, give us millions.
Yeah.
Give the player a five-year deal. Player's only 17. Give the player a five-year deal. We'll take him for the next 2 years. And we're happy in that case to help develop them because we're obviously getting weighed in and we're getting the player back free for 2 years, which helps the club like us. Well, not sure I'd do that in the Championship, but in League One, I was open to doing it. You know what I mean? So then the pandemic hit. So, you know, paid to that. So look, there are all sorts of things you can do with loans. Sometimes you do an emergency loan. Sometimes you do a goalkeeper. You know, if you get to a stage where you've suddenly issues throughout the squad and people are hurt, then you might have to go into the loan market. That's the beautiful thing about the flexibility of the loan market. I don't like the negotiation end of it, but it definitely works for the Football League when we can use it to our advantage.
So how, and this is kind of the last question on the loans, is you talked about some of the bigger clubs, the Premier League clubs, they'll have a loan manager who's kind of managing it all and checks in with you every month to see how things are going. When you get kind of lower down the pyramid, and as an example, you know, we loaned Callum Cook from you last year. How involved would you get as the parent club in watching progress, seeing how he's doing, checking in, performances? Or is it pretty much hands-off, like, he's really now your guys' player and, you know, we're not going to really worry about him until the loan's over and he comes back into the fold?
So hard truth would be, you know, if it's a player you see has a future with you and is going to be an asset and you've got to get them out to get game time to improve them, we'd be all over that. We would send people to watch them. If it's a player who you just want off your wage bill, has got no future, your manager's never going to pick them, the manager might pick them once a month with the player. I know that sounds horrendous, but football is a road industry. So in Callum's case, we knew he didn't have a future with us.
Yep.
The best move was to you guys. You couldn't afford to take over his contract last year. So we had to do a deal. We ended up obviously on the wrong end of that deal, but you know, we're fond of Bradford, so Baz did a deal.
And thank you for that.
When the player's contract ran out, we'd finished paying him through the fucking summer, and then you took over his contract, you know. So in that case, without being disrespectful to Callum, did we go and watch?
Yeah, he wasn't going to be – he's not a long-term player for you, so.
We knew Bradford would be his destination. And you know what? He's got potential. He could come again. But if it was a young starlet of ours and they went to Boreham Wood or they went somewhere like Wrexham, we would probably have one of our scouts watch them 2-3 times a month.
Yeah. All right. Well, I had a question that actually came in from James Watson, who is a Huddersfield fan. And James mentioned about Reece Brown. You know, the question was actually, how good is Reece Brown? And the framing is, you know, from their perspective, they saw him at Huddersfield. Maybe they didn't think that he was what they needed. And, you know, you see him coming in. And he obviously did well for you guys last year. And, you know, enough that you wanted to keep him. So I'm going to make the question less about, you know, how good or otherwise is Reece Brown, and more a question of, is the gap between the lower end of the Championship right now and the top of League One, is that such a big gap where a player who can do really well for you is really going to struggle at the bottom of the Championship?
We were in for Reece when Huddersfield came in for him. He was on a free from Forest Green. You had to pay a fee because he was on before. But we were in that reckoning. We made an offer to his agent. Being a young player, he's gone with the Championship clubs. They've offered him more money. We wanted him. We saw him as a project who would need a year or two in League One and then step up. So I'm not going to denigrate him and say he's not ready for the Championship.
Right.
I'm not going to have a go at Huddersfield either because they've had a couple of managers and maybe they deem he's not ready yet. I I like him a lot as a player. Our manager does as well. I think he's very settled with us. Some people just don't come off at clubs. We've had it ourselves. So I don't know. Look, if we win the league and Reece goes back to Huddersfield and lights it up with them in a championship, I'd be delighted for him. I'd be gutted personally. Yeah. But I'd be delighted for him because he's a really, really great young man. And Huddersfield have been really good to deal with. And they've brought in a new manager. We bided our time and we waited till, you know, he'd made that decision that maybe Reece wasn't going to play as much as he'd like. I think Reece is at the stage in his career where he wants to play 40, 50 games. I'm not sure he's going to get that at Huddersfield. They probably have aspirations to go up again. You know, they had a bit of a down year last year, but they were in the Premier League 2 years ago. So they're probably quite ambitious. They've got a good new young manager and they're probably going to a different level. So maybe he wouldn't have got as many chances there. Hence why it was kind of suited him and suited them for him to come to us. Kind of win-win for both of us.
Yeah. It's interesting. We had a player on loan called Luke O'Brien from Huddersfield, not last season, the season before, when we had an awful year and got relegated down to League Two. But he was a standout even at 17, 18, gave him his league debut. You know, he walked over to Huddersfield this year and he was their player of the year. And I'm sure 2 years ago when he came on loan to us, when they're still in the Premier League, he probably didn't have any dreams of or reality of getting anywhere near that first team. Look, 12 months later, he's player of the year.
Harry Kane was a Leighton Orient and different clubs on loan. You know, this is the life of a Premier League youngster Luke was at Huddersfield in the Premier League at the time. That's just the way it works. And there's nothing wrong with going out and getting football. It's not the end of your career when you're a young player. You're sent out to get games. You know, it is what it is. So, look, the loan market's not something I love. We've made a lot of mistakes in the loan market. You know, I said this year we keep it at a, like, maximum two, if that. If we have. There'll be a lot of clubs with 5-6 loans in their team. I fucking hate that. You know, where you're playing a club. Like, I remember a few years ago, Swindon went to Wembley, and half of the players were owned by Spurs or Villa or, you know, kind of like, well, you know, as a fan, that's got to be frustrating. Look, Swindon, they did it for nothing. So, and it nearly worked for them.
Well, that's what became of us, though. And that's the year that we got relegated, was we just had a bunch of people on loan. And you felt like there was no connection. Like, I've never had a lesser connection with the players that played for my team as when it's packed full of loan players. And they may have tried, and they probably did try. Like I talk about Luke. Luke tried harder than a lot of the players, at least on the surface, that were employed by us. But because they're not yours, you're not going to invest yourself in them. You know you've only got them for a certain period of time. It doesn't feel like it's your club so much.
Years ago, Hereford came up with us from League 2 to League 1. Then they went out of business. But at the time, Hereford were very much half of their squad were loan players. And it got them so far, and then it blew up on them. And that's a classic example where they then went back-to-back in relegations, then they went into non-league, and then they went out of business, but risen again from the ashes. But they were with us in our first ever promotion from League 2. They finished, I think, third. We were second. So there again is a tale. It's like, be very careful, because having half your team made up of loans, no disrespect to the players, they're not going to bleed for your football club. They know, come the end of the stint, you know, like in the army.
They can get out.
Yeah, they can get out. They're gone. And if they leave carnage behind or it's a wreck behind, they don't care. You know, it's just difficult. We had Lee Tomlin last year. The idea was to get him fit and get us promoted. And unfortunately, the previous manager we had didn't use the time we had to get him fit. And he went back to Cardiff after the season with us and he lost 20 pounds and he was player of the year for them this year. And he's got a new club. So it worked for him. It didn't work for us.
Well, I know we're kind of running short on time, so I'm going to just ask one last question that we got. And it's from Luke Naylor. Luke is a Gillingham fan. And Luke asks, you know, as a chairman, obviously you're focused on Peterborough transfers only, but how much do you actually keep tabs on what your competitors are doing? You know, do you keep an eye on who they are buying and you know, kind of the impact that you think those players are going to make on those teams?
Yes, I will always, you know, every day in the morning and night I'll check the transfer center and I'll see what deals are done. I'll watch the press. You see the rumors, the shite, but I'll keep an eye. I have a list of talent throughout the Football League. Anytime those names ping up, they'll come up on my computer. There's alerts. I'll say, okay, well, we're not in for them now, but they've gone somewhere. That's fine. We'll go there in a year and buy them off then. You know, non-league players, we had a couple last year. They ended up going to league clubs. That's okay. We picked them up in a year. So I'm very involved because this is my business and the data, the analytics of it. I have a list as long as my, arm, let's just say, players in number 10, number 9, number 7, 6, 5, 4. So every time clubs make moves for those players, there's a little bit of a chuckle. And then there's fuck, maybe I should have dived in. Then I start questioning my judgment, you know, which you do. But that's fine. You can't sign them all, you know, and that's never a truer word spoken. You know, say that to Baz. You know, Baz always says, back your judgment. But you can't sign them all, Chairman, or, you know, Presidente. So he's absolutely right. But I'm very, very, this is my industry. This is my game. You know, I sleep and eat, drink and sleep at 24/7. So I tend to always know what's going on, whether it's on gossip sites, whether it's official transfers. Well, you know, I have my own scouts that work for me. I have my own data stuff that gets fed to me. So I'm always curious to see the ones I might have ticked as no's, how they've gone and done.
Do you have any regrets of people you've missed that you just almost pulled the trigger and there was just something about it that you said, you know what, I'm not sure about that. And they've gone and, you know, proven you otherwise.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, we are the deal makers and we do great business and we have a good reputation for the way we do our business, but we haven't always got it right. We've signed some bad signings. You know, when I say bad signings, I don't mean bad people, just signings.
They haven't worked out.
Yeah, we've missed out on some where I've gone no, and they've gone on and you know, I'm not saying they've won World Cups, but they've gone on and had good careers. So there's always, I mean, we had a chance years ago to go, was it Jason Punchin at Barnet? Didn't pull the trigger on that one. Obviously, he went on, played for Palace, played for the clubs.
Yeah.
You know, there's another 10 names I could give you, but maybe I'll save that for the next book of what if. But, I don't play what if all the time. It's, you know, at the end of the day, you live and die by the choices and the decisions you make, you know, particularly in business and in life. And to keep swooning and looking backwards and go, oh, we should have done this, and we should have done that. Just kind of live like that, because if you live like that, you're funny farm, you know, you lose your fucking mind.
All right. Well, we're going to call that quits for this week. I want to thank you again for your time, Darren, catching up. We're going to do this all over again next week. So next week's episode is going to be August the 26th, where we're almost, today's episode is the 26th. Next week is going to be, it's going to be beginning of September. So we're almost going to be start of the season and talking about some football finally. And
We need some more questions from fans. So
yeah, we do.
No, let's get some hot topics for next week. Let's get some more questions from fans. There'll be more deals done in the window to come. You know, are you happy with your window? Are you disappointed with your window? You know, if there's fans out there, throw names at me. Give me some names out there as well. You know, you think I'm good at scouting and data and stuff. Have Phil test. Throw some names. Why haven't you signed him? What about him? Do you like him? I'll do my best to be as honest, brutally honest with the hard truth and all those things. So we want some viewer engagement. When we get into the season, we're probably going to have a couple of fans on the show. You know, season is rolling, so we can speak to some fans who lose their shit here on the podcast. I actually had a couple of ex-players message me, say, oh, do you want me to come on your podcast? The arrogance of them. Do you know what I mean? So we want some engagement with them. We're close to the season starting. You know, maybe, Phil, next week you can choose your winners. You know, I'm not going to do it because I hate doing that, but you can pick people going up and down in the three leagues.
All right.
Game next week. And maybe we can get some fans to throw in their own thoughts as well.
Any questions as well, as always, you can shoot them over to us on Twitter. So Dara is at DMAC102. I'm at PIdson. And we have our email. All the emails come through to me. I'll forward them over. We'll put them into our kind of prep notes. And that's contact@hardtruthfootball.com. So lots of different ways for you to get engaged. And we love all the emails and the conversations and everything that we get. So we'll be back next week. Until then, stay safe.
Cheerio.